From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, an extreme haunting. Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. With ISIS distributing its propaganda and recruiting messages to as many as 200,000 people on social media worldwide, U.S. officials are warning there is no way to monitor their online encrypted communications. The officials, appearing before the House Homeland Security Committee, said while there are only several thousand hardcore ISIS propagandists, technology was complicating efforts to monitor them. Social networking is getting strong. The Federal Reserve said the economy grew between April and May in its latest assessment of the economy, rebounding from a contraction of the first quarter. In its so-called beige book, it said surveys from across the country suggested overall economic activity expanded from early April to late May. Michael Miss Shedlock with us. Well, that's kind of good news, Mike, isn't it?
Well, it's good, but it expanded from where, George? The GDP was 0.7% negative in the first quarter. So yeah, we expected a rebound. Imports, the trade deficit was a little better this month, but it was a disaster last month. The Atlanta Fed is estimating a second quarter GDP of about 1%. So 1% and minus 0.7%, what do you have? You've got GDP that's roughly flat for a half a year. That's certainly not what the economists expected and said. But you and I have been looking at retail sales. Mm-hmm. They've not been very good. Unless those sales turn around, George, it's going to be more weakness.
What about the strength of the Internet, though, Michael, for sales like that?
Internet sales are certainly growing. That's the biggest advancement. But there's no margin on those sales. So there's no profit. Bookstores are getting hurt. You know, anyone that's competing with Amazon, Walmart is actually going to announced a couple weeks ago that they were going to compete against Amazon. Now, that's a good thing for the consumer, but it's not good for corporate profits. It's not good for hiring.
Good point. Thanks, Mish. A Pennsylvania woman went on trial for the rarely prosecuted offense of fortune-telling, accused of persuading a client that she could lift a cloud of spells and curses in exchange for payments that likely reached thousands of dollars. April Unawanich, 38 years old, of Philadelphia, faces 55 counts of fortune-telling, theft by unlawful taking, and theft by deception. Now, she's accused of approaching a woman at a convenience store where she identified herself as a fortune teller and said she could rid her of her dark cloud. And a shocking incident which exposes the cruel side of blind faith. A 55-year-old man was beheaded by an occultist group in India for better harvest and rain. He is believed to have been killed by a group called the Orcas, who bury human heads in farms as part of their worship for better rain and harvest. What's going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with our astronomer, Stephen Cates. We had a full moon yesterday, Stephen. It was called a strawberry moon, huh?
Absolutely spectacular. And the coast listeners can go out right now, of course, whatever they're doing, safely look up in the sky, and you'll see the remnants of the beautiful strawberry full moon. And where that is, George, right now, happens to lie right almost smack dab in the center of where the core of our Milky Way galaxy is. So the moon right now rides through the star clouds of the beautiful constellation Sagittarius. But projecting, George, into June, so many great things that are happening. And I mentioned about a week ago that in June we'll be starting to see the conjunction of both Venus and Jupiter. So if you look into the west, the unmistakably bright object is Venus, just again right in the northwest. It's about 67 million miles away from your eye. The left, George, ever encroaching the planet Venus on Jupiter. It's about 535 million miles away. And what's going to happen, what makes this really cool, is by the end of the month of June, we're going to see these two objects, Venus and Jupiter, about a third of a moon diameter in the sky, making it a spectacular conjunction for people of all ages. They're two bright objects. And NASA has designated, George, as we close, June 30th, of course, Asteroid Day. and that commemorates that great explosion, as you know, back in 1908, the Tunguska event.
That's right.
Go to drsky.com because now, George, as we finally close, you can see the International Space Station on many passages around the Earth in the Northern Hemisphere off of drsky.com. The link is Heavens Above, and the aviation site is, of course, photorecon.net.
Thank you, Stephen. Stephen, Dr. Sky. I'm going to be in Vancouver, British Columbia this weekend for my live stage event. And depending on wherever I would go, whatever event I might go to, somebody always came up to me and said, I need to meet somebody. I can't get along with anybody. I can't meet somebody who understands me. They're not into the strange and the ghosts and the conspiracies. And this started happening more and more and more. So I started talking to some people, and here's our announcement for the night. We are starting a group for people of like minds who want to get together. It's called ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com. It's free to join. Psychic Joseph Jacobs writes a blog for it. Glynis McCants, the numbers lady, writes a blog for it. And Joseph, I hope people can find love this way. What do you think?
I think love and friendship, and both are dependent on good communication. I think both of us will help out a great deal. I'm delighted to be working on this. And happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
It's not your birthday in Los Angeles, but it is in Detroit.
It is. That's right.
You know. I'll be writing about various dynamics and various kinds of relationships, maybe once a week or so. So it's a site that people can visit again and again. And even if it isn't to form deeper relationships, finding other people in this fragmented world we live in, you know, and I talk to a lot of couples where one person is a believer and the other one isn't. So who do you talk to? And even in a relationship, you can't expect everything from your mate. There are intellectual pursuits, hobby pursuits that, you know, or sports that that somebody needs to get interested in every once in a while in their growth.
Well, I was just amazed at how many people would come up to me, Joseph, at all these events and just simply say, you know, what are the reasons we're here? George, yeah, we're here because we want to see you and hear you speak, but we want to meet people. And so it just dawned on me, let's give it a try. So we're going to give it a shot, Joseph.
I think it's great. And I'm looking forward to, you know, giving people some feedback on their relationships and the new people that they meet online. And we'll have a lot of fun with it.
Super. Joseph Jacobs, again, he'll write a blog. Glynis McCants, the numbers lady, will too. And there's no cost to join. You can sign up. It's ParanormalDate.com. If you want to take it further and meet people and go out, just use the coupon code George, and that'll help you out a lot. And welcome back to Coast. Listen to this. The FBI apparently has been behind mysterious surveillance aircraft over most U.S. cities. Scores of low-flying planes circling American cities are part of a civilian air force operated by the FBI and obscured behind fictitious companies. At least 50 aircraft are traced back to the FBI, identified more than 100 flights in 11 states over a 30-day period since late April, orbiting both major cities and rural areas. What the heck are they doing? We're going to talk now with Michael Dougherty. Michael is the president and CEO of LabMD, an Atlanta-based clinical and anatomical medical lab with a national client base. Now, he founded LabMD back in 1996 after 14 years in surgical device sales. He was born and raised in Detroit. He holds a BA in economics from the University of Michigan. And Michael, from one Detroiter to another, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good morning. You know, it was one of my best reasons to be here is another fellow Detroiter. Happy birthday.
There aren't many of us anymore.
Well, not in Detroit.
Oh, that's true.
We're all over the place.
My mother is still there. Do you still have family out there?
I do. I have a sister in Northville, and then we all seem to trek back every Christmas, and And my father passed a year ago, but they used to live in Florida and Michigan, and now my mother lives in Florida.
Well, that's great. And Northville, it doesn't have the horse track there anymore, does it?
It does. We will go by it up Main Street all the time. I've never been there, but it's still there.
Oh, now, somebody told me they're not racing horses anymore.
Oh, I guess no. Not. There's an asterisk by Michigander now with me. I'm only there like Christmas and the summer, so.
But here not to talk about horses, here to talk about an incredible story that is very close to home for you. Your book is called The Devil Inside the Beltway, and you are exposing something that I think is going to knock the socks off a lot of people when they hear this. Give us a little background, though, about you, Michael, and LabMD.
Well, I did come from Michigan in a sort of a humble Detroit upbringing. Both my parents met when they were police officers in Detroit, and then I was raised in Detroit till the riots and grew up outside, went to Michigan. One of the first in the family to start college right out of school, and I kind of was living the American dream. Got into medicine and surgical sales in my 30s, started LabMD. And that was a company that we just worked on cancer detection in the urology space. And by having pathologists that only worked on prostate cancer, we had what I consider very good niche expertise, because different type of cancers are different. And it was a private company, small. I wanted quality and good profit margin. I didn't necessarily care about taking on the big boys with market share. And the differentiation was our software and how we streamlined the relationship, technology-wise, through the time of the burgeoning internet between the physician's office and the lab. And things are going along great. We worked about 40 employees by 2008.
That's great.
Then out of the blue, and I mean, it's so satisfying now to talk about what people thought I was crazy or conspiracy theorist on this, because it's all being proven right now, so it's easy to say. But out of the blue, the phone rang in 2008. And my vice president spoke to a guy named Robert Baubeck in Pittsburgh with a company named Tyversa, who I'd never heard of before, nor did anybody else. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, we've got one of your files that we found out in cyberspace on a peer-to-peer network. And this startled us to no end. It's hard to go back 7 years and just realize how different we were, not knowing about breaches,
right,
or data security. This is not really in the lexicon back then.
We didn't even know what viruses were on computers back then.
Well, you're right. I often say, the only breach we knew was like a birth breach or something. I mean, this just wasn't there. But we were a young, aggressive crowd. I had four IT people working for us for a company of like, in the mid-30s, 40s, a high percentage of tech people, because it was what made us different. Because we're competing with massive Quest and LabCorp and massive hospital systems, and we were like the elephant. We were the mouse between the elephant's toes. We were so good, we were so small, they couldn't get to us. So anyway, we are startled by this and like, well, prove it. And he sent the file. And it was one file off of clearly our billing software in the billing department, one file with 9,000 patients in it.
Wow.
And their billing information, no home phone numbers, no home addresses, but social security numbers, date of birth, name, and insurance information, and their diagnosis code for why they were having the medical test. And so this blew our mind, and we said, how did you get it? And right off the bat, he wouldn't tell us an IP address or anything unless we paid him. And I immediately told every employee, and there's only the small management team at this point, we did not, obviously involve everyone, but it was, do not speak to this guy unless it's in writing. Email only. Do not talk to him. Because it stunk right off the bat.
Sure.
And so we started looking outside in cyberspace on peer-to-peer networks. Couldn't find anything. And for your listeners, if you don't know, peer-to-peer network is really, it's not really a network of connected computers through a cord or the same roof. It's just you have software on your workstation, and it allows a folder on your workstation to be open to share whatever in it if anyone wants to come and usually look for music, or you can look for music through their folder. Anywhere on the internet that's on and open. So we march into this billing manager's office because we know the support has to come from there. And sure enough, she has LimeWire installed in the workstation. She has no idea she's doing anything except breaking company policy by listening to music at work. And we go into that music folder, and there's 800 music files, and there's this one medical file, and about 30 other you know, ancillary files that don't affect anything. So we get rid of that file, we close that, we search everything down, we are making sure all the patients are secure. Then we start looking for it in cyberspace, we don't find it, and this guy starts emailing us to want to continue to sell his services, and he won't answer any questions. So our lawyers at this point are, you know, just tell this guy to go away. You've got it remediated, it's fixed, go away. And in the book starts with his email. Thank goodness I had this guy talk in writing, because, you know, if you tell people things like this, they think you're crazy.
That's right. Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah.
And so in writing, I want people to make up their own mind, and I want them to see the story, but I want them to be their own judge, which is everyone wants to be. And it's so much easier when they can read the words themselves and be their own judge. So this just went on for a few months in 2008, and he was being, as your readers will read in the book, it's seductive in the sense of, oh, did you see that Supreme Court Justice Breyer's information has been out? It was in the Washington Post. Don't worry, you're not alone. The earlier you do this, the less likely the spread will be, and if it's out there spreading, you'll catch it. And all this sort of like friendly talk that wasn't so friendly. So we finally told him to go away. By the end of 2008, he had his lawyer call us and say, well, we're giving this over to the Federal Trade Commission. And your data security practices are suspect, in a very aggressive tone of voice.
This is coming from a salesperson?
This is coming from the CEO of the company. Bobick turned out to be the CEO. That's a great point, George, because I'm like, what the heck's the CEO on the phone for? And it was the CEO who then had his lawyer call and be that aggressive.
You didn't do anything wrong.
Bingo. And welcome to quicksand.
And it's important for me, Michael, to read the subtitle of your book, The Devil Inside the Beltway, so people will really get an idea of what's going to happen tonight. Here it is, The Shocking Exposé of the U.S. Government's Surveillance and Overreach into Cybersecurity, Medicine, and Small Business. So this guy heads up a company called Tyversa, and he's trying to sell you the ability to protect your computers, but he's doing it in a very weird, aggressive way. How come?
Well, you know, the whole world of cybersecurity in a lot of ways is built on fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And so that's what he's doing. He's like, it could be, it might be. He's building that anxiety. But that's not how we roll in medicine. We're science guys. I mean, I might be a businessman, but I'm a businessman in science and medicine. And we're really, you know, 1 + 1 = 2 kind of factual. And we don't roll this with patient data. So it stuck me again, because every time I said, you know, and by the way, I never spoke to him. This is all in writing because I didn't trust him. So it was my VP speaking to him through email. So we had all this documented. But it was all, prove it. What's the IP address? Where is this? And it was every time we'd ask the question, it came back with the cryptic, well, that will require a services agreement. I'll have to check.
That's
and
weird.
It was just so.
It sounds like he was the hacker.
Well, bingo, because it's quacking like a duck real early.
Exactly.
And yet say that because he's got the anxiety and fear to divert everyone's attention of this, oh, it's the patient data and it's out there, and we don't know, and we'll have to look. And, you know, he's trying to build that anxiety game. Like, if you care so much about the patient, sir, why don't you just give me an IP address, which is really easy? Because what I was doing was verifying him. I can't just, if the patient information is so critical, which it is, then let's start at the beginning, which is, who are you? And he just wanted to leapfrog that one at all.
Yeah,
time.
That's weird. And he called originally then under the auspices of, they picked this up. They picked up the fact that your file was taken.
Right, that's what they do. They say they look out in cyberspace for unintentionally shared files, and they scoop them up in the course of their, and all these words are carefully chosen, in the normal course of business, and then they just call you up to say, "Hey, we found this. We'll be happy to help you. That's what we do. But we thought we'd like you to know." So, you know, when that friendliness didn't work and that fall concern didn't work, the last thing I was surprised at when he's calling aggressively saying he's giving it to the feds. But it was surreal. You're like, you know, all I'm thinking of is just go away.
It sounds like, Michael, a company that replaces windows and they hire a guy to break windows.
Right.
Right? So you break the window, and then all of a sudden, your salesperson is knocking on that business's door saying, hey, can we fix your window?
Bingo. It's called a protection racket.
We're going to come back, Michael, more with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with our guest, Michael Dougherty, his book, The Devil Inside the Beltway. So, Michael, a quick review. So you had some files that were taken in cyberspace. All of a sudden, the salesman, who ends up being the CEO of a company called Diversa, calls, trying to, quote unquote, help you out of a situation. When he doesn't give you information about who he is, what he does, you back off, you balk, then he has his attorney call you. What does the attorney want?
The attorney just wants to let us know. But and that, by the way, is the best summary I've heard in a long time. Very fast, which is all I'm going to get that summary in. And he just wants to tell us that he's turning it over to the Federal Trade Commission, just wants us to know that he's in the FTC. And you have to know, my head back then was, well, go ahead. I mean, we get investigated by the feds every year. We have a great relationship with them. They're all scientists in the laboratory side. And, you know, we've got nothing to be ashamed of. We've got cutting-edge stuff. So hit it, buddy. And we can't, you know, we can't find it anywhere. We look, and we've tied down. We don't have one injured party. And but here's the other thing. This is one file.
Well, but what's he going to tell the FTC? We have a file from a company? I mean, big deal.
Right. You would think, right? I mean, you would think. And that's, so it's 2008 goes on and 2009 goes on, and we are looking for, there's a very creepy Big Brother feel about this, because in one of those emails, your listeners will see, he says, we're seeing it being downloaded. And the problem with that was we sent our employees out to go look on peer-to-peer networks for our file. You can't just, you have to know the name of the file. You have to know a lot about it. You just can't go, like, you know, find it easily using these things. That's to try to build that way that you can, but you can't. So we can't find it anywhere. We know everything about that file. And so when in the middle of that, when he tells us someone's looking for it, we get this really creepy Big Brother feel, because we're like, that's us looking for it. How do you know that? That really freaked us out. And so when he's calling the saying he's going to call the feds, I also knew this. Working in medicine as long as I did, with the thousands of patients we'd worked on, you know, when someone calls and says they're going to call the feds get lots of calls. And if they don't have a pre-existing relationship with who's calling, they typically ignore it.
Exactly.
Exactly. So I'm like,
they don't have the time to be bothered by all these calls.
Of course. I mean, you can't, you know, talk means nothing. They're busy. And they probably know more than we do. So they're just, you know, that's, so I was like, bully for you, call the phone. You know, call the feds, have a good day. But then, you know, in the federal government's sense of urgency, a year went by. And in January of 2010, when we are actually kind of getting back to normal, we're not waiting for the other shoe to drop, boom, we get a phone call from Alan Scheer at the Federal Trade Commission, who speaks to my vice president and says, and Alan Scheer turns out to be a big player in the book. He is the main investigator. And he says, you know, we have become in possession of a file, and we will be starting a non-public inquiry, and you'll be getting a letter tomorrow. And he always, as time passed, I learned this guy always spoke in short, intended, carefully selected word sentences, and very brief, boom. And the next day, you know, you expect a letter, right? Well, FedEx shows up with 11 pages single-spaced from the feds. And I mean, they want the kitchen sink. And
weird.
You know, now keep in mind, when the company really got rolling in the lab side about, at this point, 6-7 years before, we had 5 to 10 employees. So this is a small little medical company.
Michael, what the heck might have been in these files, if I can ask?
Oh, it's just, I mean, it's one file, and it had 9,000 lines of information of patients. It was 1,700 pages in a PDF of just name, phone number. Name, social security number, test code of the test, insurance carrier policy number, group number, and the diagnosis code. I mean, and so, you know, we were just baffled, going, okay, so call the lawyers, start the meter running, and we have to answer these questions. And these questions are broad. They want to know every policy, you know, every type of data we have, software. I mean, it is the whole net. So my advice was, okay, dump truck it. Give them everything.
Yeah.
Just, they want to know because we're transparent. And you know, this didn't seem odd because when we get inspected every year by the laboratory inspectors, that's exactly what happens. They come in and they have to be left alone in the laboratory for a day. And they go through every machine, every output, every manual. So we're like, fine. And I invited them to Atlanta from D.C. Didn't want to come. So we just sent everything, 5,000 pages of stuff. And the irony of some of the behavior was so bizarre. And coming from now, my growing up in Detroit, which is so strange, actually paid off. You know, I'm 54 now. So at the time, you know, I'm in my late 40s. And I'm thinking, well, I grew up with police officers and judges mm-hmm. and lawyers, and I've never seen a more unprofessional group than who I'm with now. This is shocking how they're behaving themselves because they're being so – it's like a chess match. There's no straightforward communication, which is pretty unusual early on. And it seems like they're treating us like we're created some massive crime, and we're just so confused because we're like, what on earth could we have done? But it's almost like an IRS audit where you're thinking, well, you don't want to tick them off. So you just better be as sweet and nice as possible and just give them what they want.
Give them what they want. Don't argue. Just do it.
Just do it and give them what they want. And so we did. And again, in the speed of the federal government, about 9-10 weeks later, we have a phone call, you know, after we've gone through this and they're immediately not happy. They say we didn't answer their question. You know, and I'm like, what? And now you have to know that I'm the CEO type guy. So I'm the big picture guy. I'm the relationship builder. I'm the opportunity guy. And my lawyer, who I've had at this point for years, she's outside counsel. She is very linear and organized and emotionless and reserved. And it's a great balance. So I know if anyone knows how to answer a question and make sure she has dotted her I's and crossed her T's, it's her.
And still at this point, Michael, as an outsider, I still don't know what the FTC was looking for from you, other
right.
than to harass
so
you.
We started to ask that very logical question, and they wouldn't tell us. What they did was say, well, you need to look at the Nutter decision. You need to look at consent decrees. I'm like, well, what the hell is a Nutter decision, and what the hell is a consent decree? Well, a consent decree is an agreement between the government and your organization about, you know, certain moving forward features. You would and just read the decree. They would answer the question. It was like, read this. And, you know, it's and the fact they wouldn't shoot straight at anything was crazy. Well, so the Nutter decision turned out to be an agreement where this company, and I believe Missouri, had lost files and had agreed to have the FTC audit them at their expense for 2 decades.
20 and, years.
You know, I'm like, you know, I'd rather have needles in my eyes than have these FTC people hauling over my place for 2 decades.
Now, let's jump ahead for a second, Michael.
Yeah.
Do you think this was done to harass you, to either take over your company, or maybe there was some competitor that they wanted to come to the forefront and wipe you out? Because there's something that just doesn't sound right here.
No, actually, what it was I think, and I'm pretty clear now, that this is how they harass you into succumbing. The Federal Trade Commission has, and this is government agencies. This is just, they have big, and I learned this after, right? Because I'm banging my head, what the hell's going on?
Now, what did I do, you're saying, right?
Right. And so it's really very simple. They've got really gray rules that they can twist and turn and manipulate. And Congress has allowed them to take you through this process, and you can't go to the outside courts for intervention until they're finished with you. So that's essentially a gun to the head. And when you are a business person, or in my instance, a medical laboratory where you're diagnosing cancer, you've got to get back to business. And that urgency to get back to business, and the fact that a consent decree is 20 years of money, time, and innuendo. It's reputation assassination because it goes out in the world. Your competitors have it. And you know how we don't read anything past a tweet. So the headline's going to say, LabMD agrees to 20 years of an audit. Who's going to think we did nothing wrong?
Yeah, everybody will think you did something.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And if I'm a company that of the prior 37 companies at that point that had signed these really had lost data and they weren't in medicine. Well, the second you say a medical facility can't hold their data, you're dead. And since we really couldn't find the data anywhere else, I just knew something was wrong. The whole demeanor, the behavior, the cryptic attitude, it was weird. It was weird from Tyversa, and it was weird from the FTC. And there was no way I was going to sign my own death warrant until I knew what was going on, and they wouldn't tell us. So when we got flown up to D.C., and I kid you not, I write about this in the book, that was the day alarm bells went off in the sense that these people – out of another time warp, and they're crazy. And I have got to do my own homework because no one's going to save me except myself on this one. I've got to find out what.
Yeah, you're in this one, and you're in it all the way. Did your lab just merely test, or did you come up with some possible cures for cancer?
No. We were only the testing. We got the tissue and the blood and the urine from urologists all over the country. And then we had pathologists and technicians actually tested for tumor markers. And then we gave them a diagnosis and the ball went back in their court. So we never had patients come in and we didn't work on disease management. We just worked on disease diagnosis.
So you basically tell the FTC, no.
Well,
you give them everything and then you say no. What do they do next?
Well, no was a time warp of 2 years because all the lawyers are like, just give them what they want, make them go away. No reason to get in a fight. So behind the scenes, I'm researching. And I'm not telling them no or trying to be nice. And here's what I found out. And this, I'll give you the months of work in a minute.
Sure.
I find out in August 2010 that the FTC, that Homeland Security had given $24.5 million to Dartmouth University on a grant, 30-month partial grant for Dartmouth to investigate cybersecurity issues. Evidently, peer-to-peer software was all over the federal government, and perfectly professional, innocent employees were leaking things that were very important and secret. And who did they use for this? Tyversa. And I find a $24.5 million grant. I find Tyversa working with Dartmouth with Homeland Security. I find 2007 congressional hearings. And who's sitting there in front of House Oversight? Bobick, General Wesley Clark, who's in on their advisory board, the Federal Trade Commission, U.S. Patent and Trade Office. And I'm thinking I cracked the case here. Then I find Commerce testimony for 2009. I find him back in front of Oversight in 2009. And I find our file in the congressional record. He put our file in the record, and it's in the Dartmouth study, and it's in Wired magazine. And this is all in the rearview mirror in 2010. I'm like, holy cow, they're in this together. I knew it. And so I call my lawyers saying I'm cracked the case, and I'm pulling my hair out because they're like, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter because the federal government, Congress, has given and you're going to have to take this one in. This is unbelievable. Congress has given the FTC powers to make sure consumers are protected from unfairness. And all they're saying is that our data security might be unfair, but they get to define what's unfair.
That's bizarre.
They've never said rules. They've never set standards. And this is the twisting in the wind definition they get to use, which is why most companies roll over, because it is a kangaroo court.
So we can see Anthem gets hacked a few months ago.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody does anything about that.
You got that right.
So here you are. Somebody taps into you, takes a file in order to make you the victim, basically, and then to turn it around on you. What does the FCC finally do? Do they shut you down? Do they sue you? What do they do?
No, they just drain you dry. We went through another year and a half of just hoping they'd go away because everyone was so incredulous. They thought, okay, you're dead if they want to choose to kill you, but they'll probably go away. And the way they kill you is they drain you dry unless you roll.
And were they basically saying, though, Michael, you need to protect your computer files from getting hacked.
Correct.
And then you need to hire Taversa to fix this.
Well, they leave that as an innuendo. They you know, it gets more expensive than that, you know, because they don't tell you anything you're supposed to do. They suggest you hire an outside company, and, you know, consultants really, you know, people that are paid to find something wrong. So you can see you're stuck in this game of fear, uncertainty, and doubt where you're spending tons of money on consulting firms who have to find something, and you're getting audited by the feds, and all these people have to find something or they're not doing their jobs, and you're sitting there being victimized by all this as they try to act like they're saving the day and protecting us. It's a joke.
Somewhere along the line, you're forced to shut down one of your detection centers.
Well, that was way in early 14, because by taking on the fight, it really drained us dry. For a long time, I was seen as being incredibly stubborn, and people were really in the dark and terrified what was going on, and we weren't getting any real attention. But as this went on, the next year, from the time I found out all this stuff, we just hoping they were going to go away, and we're spending tons of money on lawyers and to try to make them go away, to repackage what we want, to be as nice as can be. At the same time, here's the thing. They wouldn't tell us what we had to do right. They wouldn't say specifically what we had to do wrong. So if we did something wrong, we want to know, and so we want to fix it. But since they won't say that, we had to go buy the very best possible for the time technology, which, here's a shock, didn't exist for companies under 500 employees. So we had to customize things, put together, and we're just shooting in the dark, aiming as high as we can, hoping they go away.
And how many companies out there were getting the same kind of treatment?
Well, you mean as far as the FTC coming after them?
Yeah, or government in general.
Very few, because this is how the game's played. The agencies are really frustrated with Congress not having cyber law. So what they do is they really picked LabMD to be ahead on a spike. You know, hindsight's 20/20. They didn't know they're going to get the fight out of me that they got.
They wanted you to roll over.
Right. But you know, the odds are a small company is going to roll over. And they wanted to get into medicine. They wanted to regulate medicine. So they want to use us so that the lawyers are run out there finger pointing that's what can happen to you. That's the game. They do the head-on spike, which is a very medieval type of you know, mass control. And they take these companies and these consent decrees, and it sounds so nice. Well, it is a game if you're Sony or you're TJ or something that isn't going to really impact your business too much. You've got the money to do it. But when you're diagnosing cancer, you've got competing reps that are going to go tell your surgeons who have 5 seconds of attention span that LabMD maybe can't protect itself. No one reads the fine print. You know, and so we're dead. So I realized I was in this unique spot that I was dead no matter what. So am I going to go down, you know, and just roll over and really not be able to look myself in the mirror the rest of my days? Or am I going to fight? So it was real easy coming from Detroit to fight.
Sure is. We're born that way.
It is much more fun. Huh. So because now it's turning. So by 13, they finally said, we're going to file a consent decree. Now, you know, I knew very quickly that in 2012 that what I just described is like a lose-lose situation. The only way out of this is to think outside the box. So I decided to start writing the book because I knew if at least I will educate people about what they can't believe. You have to, you know, when you're accused, they love saying you're nuts. They love isolating.
Was this, would you have been able to have caved in early if you had just told the guy from Taversa, Bobak, okay, I'll buy whatever you have here to protect my files? What would have happened had you said
that? What
I
know now, if I would have signed early, he would not have kicked me over to the FTC.
No, he would have gone to another company and done the same thing.
Exactly.
But you would have been okay. You would have been one of his clients.
Yes.
Still not knowing.
Then I would have been spun for years to come buying bogus services.
Forever. Let's talk more at the top of the hour about what happens when you find a Taversa insider.